The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, this morning, I thought to explore a little bit about practice and some tools that I've found to be very supportive of general tools that I found to be very supportive of practice, whatever kind of practice that you explore. So these are kind of more tools that help us set up the container in which any kind of a meditation can unfold. And yet to start, what I'd like to do is just to remind us all about why we practice. Because, you know, sometimes we can just dive into the how we practice. And as we explore the mechanics of practice, it can be, but why am I doing that? You know, what's the purpose of that? So I wanted to just start with a little bit of an overview, a short overview about why we practice. And what we're doing in practicing in this particular practice is cultivating mindfulness. We're cultivating this awareness of being, of what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. This is not our usual way of relating to the world. We're often relating to memories of the past, thoughts about the future, and kind of lost in that. Our orientation is towards past and future often as we navigate our world. And this is very natural. We do have a capacity to do that. We have a capacity to think back on what we did in the past and how that impacts us in moving towards the future. But it has become so much the way we live that we forget that actually the only place we're alive, the only place we experience anything, is right now. Whenever we're lost in thoughts of the past or future, whenever we're thinking about things, we're not actually alive to what's happening. We're missing our lives. And so that's one reason to cultivate this experience or practice of mindfulness. It helps us be here for our lives. The Buddha also pointed to this practice of mindfulness as being a key to helping us understand and uncover why we struggle so much, why it is that we feel so often that we're feeling frustrated or put upon or reactive or confused or wanting things to be a certain way. And all of these kind of reactive states often related to they're in relationship to what's happening in the present moment. And yet we get lost in those relationships. Again, we're lost, we're not really connected to what's actually happening now. And if we are aware, for instance, that we're frustrated or angry or confused or feel put upon in the present moment, we're often more relating to that reactivity through the thing or the experience in the world or idea in the world or thought in our own mind that has us feeling that way. And so we're oriented. So if we're angry about something or confused about something, we're often oriented towards the thing we're angry about or thing we're confused about. Thinking about the past, how did I get here? Thinking about the future, how can I get around this? And so we're relating to the experience of anger or frustration or confusion through through the thing we're angry about or confused about or frustrated about. Mindfulness means turning towards the actual experience of confusion or anger or frustration or whatever is happening in the present moment. Why would we do that? I certainly asked that question early in my practice when I heard that instruction. I read that instruction, actually, in a book somebody sent to me. I was so caught by my anger. Somebody, you know, sent me a book, said, hey, I found this mindfulness helpful. Maybe you will. And the instruction I got from reading this book was something like, well, pay attention to your anger. You know, notice that you're angry while you're angry. And I was very uncertain about how that would be of any value at all. And yet I explored it. Again, it was the instruction was kind of take your attention out of the thing you're angry at and turn towards the actual experience of anger or whatever is the reactive emotion. And I began exploring that and very quickly began to experience the benefits of it, which was that as soon as I noticed that I was angry, as soon as the capacity of awakening to, oh, anger's happening in the present moment, there was a way in which it kind of cut the spiral of reactivity. And so I could kind of go back to my day. And so that's one of the benefits of being waking up to reactivity. When we're focused on the thing we're reacting to, it's like if we're angry about something and we're focused on the thing we're angry about, what happens? We get angrier. When we turn back to, it's kind of like turning back to the actual experience of anger. First thing we've done is we've cut that attention to the thing that's making us angry, and we've opened up to the actual experience of anger, and so that it allows the anger to dissipate kind of naturally, because it's like we no longer have our foot on the gas pedal of that anger. We've put our anger into neutral. We've put the car into neutral, and it kind of allows the anger to come to a stop. The other benefit, and this is a little bit less obvious initially why it's a benefit, but as we turn and explore the experience of reactivity in the present moment, we begin to understand at a very immediate level that reactivity doesn't feel good. It hurts. Here and now, in this moment, anger hurts. Even wanting doesn't feel very good. That's even harder to see. Anger, it's pretty easy to see that it hurts as soon as we see it. It's like, wow, that doesn't feel very good. Frustration has the mind kind of contracted and confused. And so all of these reactive emotions, we begin to, with mindfulness, recognize that they're not actually leading us to well-being here and now. In this moment, they're taking us away from well-being. And what we've done in our orientation towards the future, towards the past, in our orientation towards the things we are reactive to, is basically we've bought into the belief that anger preaches, which is, get rid of that thing and you'll be happy. Or we've bought into the belief that wanting preaches, which is, have that thing and you'll be happy. And so our minds have bought into the belief that future moments will be good if I act on that anger. That belief that anger preaches, the belief that wanting preaches, doesn't care that right in this moment, well-being isn't happening, that happiness isn't happening. In a sense, those reactive emotions are willing to give up well-being here and now for some possible moment of happiness sometime in the future. This is not actually very supportive for our life. So this is another benefit of learning to be mindful. Now, I will say, and I'll say a little bit more later if I have time, that, as I say that, turning towards reactivity in the present moment, rather than, buying into the story that get rid of that thing and you'll be happy, can lead to the sense that what's being taught here is non-action or passivity. So just simply sit and observe rather than take action. And that is not actually what is being taught here. What is being explored is this possibility that, you know, actually much of the way that we act in the world is based on reactivity. And so we think, you know, again, another thing that anger preaches or wanting preaches is the only way to do anything about this is to act on this energy of anger or to act on this energy of wanting. The only way to move forward is to follow this reactive energy. And what we begin to discover as we actually open to reaction and see a falling away of reactivity is that there are many motivating forces in our hearts other than reactivity. The motivating force of love, of compassion, of kindness, of wisdom, of generosity. Beautiful, wholesome qualities that inspire us to act. And so the opening to and letting go of reactivity doesn't leave us like a lump, a non-responsive lump in the world. Actually, it opens our hearts to more fully resonate with the world and act from a beautiful heart rather than a contracted heart. And so this perspective of practice, not only does it help us with our reactivity, but it also helps us to see that a lot of the way that we've been relating to the world is based on misunderstanding. We misunderstand. We take things to be permanent that are impermanent. We take things to be reliable that are unreliable. And somewhere in our hearts, we kind of are aware that things aren't permanent forever. We all kind of know our mortality. We kind of know that. Intellectually, we know that. And yet, the reality doesn't really penetrate. And so we take our lives to be permanent. We take things in the world to be permanent. We relate to them as if we were going to live forever, and we relate to things as if they were going to last forever, even knowing in our intellectual mind that they don't. This is our relationship to the world. We have no idea when we're going to die. Yesterday, I was pulling up at an intersection, and the light was green, and the car ahead of me was pulling into the intersection, and somebody ran the red light, slammed into that car that was in the intersection. Fortunately, they hit the rear end of the car and didn't hit the driver's door. So apparently, everybody was okay. But a split second difference, a split second, and that person would have been killed. It can happen any time. And yet we act as if our lives are permanent. And so our whole relationship to the world is based on some misunderstandings. And our practice of being aware of what's happening in this moment begins to actually reveal at a very deep level the impermanent and unreliable nature of experience, which helps us to have a more skillful relationship to the world. It may sound like having that understanding that I might die at any moment would be depressing, but in my experience, it's not, actually. It creates more of a sense of aliveness and joy for what's here, for the fleeting nature of the world. And so our practice helps to open us to a more realistic relationship to the world, as well as being a less reactive one. And so, mindfulness, according to the Buddha, is really the key to this. And yet, it's got to be awareness of what's happening in the present moment in a particular way. You know, if you meet somebody, if a friend is really angry who hasn't done much meditation practice, and you check in with them, so do you know you're angry right now? They'll probably look at you like you're kind of nuts. Like, well, yeah, duh, of course I know I'm angry. And so just being aware in the moment that you're angry, it's not quite what mindfulness is. Again, there has to be a perspective of turning towards the actual human experience of our reactivity, rather than being aware that we're angry and focused on the thing that we're angry about. So that's a key shift, is that turning towards the actual experience. Actually, what I think of mindfulness as is opening to the humanity, opening to our humanity. What does it mean to be a human being? And so there's a perspective of that, not just simply about, can I know what's happening in the present moment? There's a particular perspective the Buddha talked about, wise mindfulness, which carries a little bit of wisdom in how we pay attention, in how we explore being present. And so this is what I'd like to look at, is what are some tools that help us open to this perspective? This perspective of wise mindfulness. The first tool, and I hope to have time to cover three tools today. The first tool, relaxation. As I said in the guided meditation, you know, when our mind is caught in past or future, it's basically a kind of a tension. There's a way in which being caught in past or future keeps us out of the present moment. We relax our bodies. Actually, there's such a tight coupling between body and mind that any time there is a mental tension, a pull in the past, a pull in the future, that is actually rebounds on our bodies and creates a kind of a physical tension. Maybe not a specific muscle, but maybe more like a bracing. You know, when the mind is tight and reactive or worried or concerned or frustrated, there can be a kind of a full body kind of bracing. And we can consciously relax that. As we relax the body, it has a feedback effect on the mind. As we relax our body, as we relax any holding and bracing, it supports our minds to let go of mental tension. And so there's a kind of a really tight coupling there between mind and body. If we relax the body, it helps the mind to relax. If we relax the mind, it helps the body to relax. And as we relax the mind, the relaxed mind is actually pretty naturally aware of what's happening in the present moment. When we're not caught by thoughts of past or future, or even thinking about now, caught by emotions or reactions. When the mind is relaxed, what it's doing is receiving experience in the present moment. So it's possible to be present, to be aware, awake, alert, and relaxed. And we often associate relaxation with spacing out or having the mind drifting. And yet, you know, just the simple exploration we did at the beginning of the guided meditation of consciously relaxing the body shows that we can be aware while relaxing. And as the body relaxes, it feels pretty good. That gives us support for wanting to be there for it. And so this is a key for settling in, to learn what it means to be relaxed and present simultaneously. Relaxed and alert, they're not opposites. So relaxation is really the first tool. Second tool is awareness, mindfulness, and a particular flavor of mindfulness that I like to support and encourage is receptive awareness. So mindfulness itself is awareness of what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. We could say that's a kind of a basic definition of mindfulness. And so what's happening in the present moment? What's obvious in the present moment? You know, right now, what's the most obvious thing happening in your present moment experience? Maybe hearing. Maybe body sensation, a pressure, hearing, a vibration through the body, maybe an emotion, a mood. What's obvious in this moment? Relax and don't look for it. It's kind of like let what's obvious come to you. This is a receptive way that mindfulness works. We don't have to pick what we're paying attention to in order to be mindful. This is a key, often confusion around what mindfulness is. At least for me, it was a confusion. I thought that in order to be mindful, I had to be the one picking what to be mindful of. I had to pick the breath or pick some experience and pay attention to that. Even the language of the instruction was, you know, okay, so you choose the breath, you pay attention to the breath. If sound becomes predominant, let go of the breath and choose the sound. Even the way the language in the instructions I got originally were that way. It's like you're the one in charge of choosing what to pay attention to. And so there is a way that we can direct the attention. It's an amazing capacity of our minds that we can choose what to pay attention to. And we can also not consciously choose what to pay attention to, but rather settle back and notice what attention is already paying attention to. The factor of attention in our minds is the factor that picks something out of our whole body-mind-sense experience. Pick something to pay attention to. And we can be involved consciously in that choice. I can ask you right now, can you pay attention to the experience of breathing? Can you know the sensation of your feet? So this is a kind of, I'm supporting a directing of the attention for you. So we can choose to direct the attention. Or we can kind of settle back and see what and relax. What's obvious? What's most obvious? Maybe what's most obvious to you, it may not be a specific experience. It may not be that, you know, particularly you're aware of a particular sound or a particular sensation. It might be more of a broader experience of just, I'm aware that I'm sitting in this room. Or I'm simply aware. Or maybe it's a more general sense of, I'm aware that I'm tired. So this receptive awareness, you know, when we direct the attention, often we're directing to something very specific. We're directing to the breath or to sound. And we're directing to a particular area. And in receptive attention, we're kind of letting go that it might be specific. It might be a vague or broad experience. Analogy I sometimes give around the directed and receptive aspects to attention is it's kind of like our breath in this way. And we can choose right now, choose to take an in-breath. You direct the attention. Choose to take an in-breath. Choose to make an out-breath. We can be involved in the choice of breathing. It's you know, one of those systems of our body where we can be involved in that choice. Or we can let go and let the breathing breathe itself. The breathing takes care of itself all the time. You know, when you're asleep, the breathing takes care of itself. When you're driving the car, usually the breathing takes care of itself. If you're focused on something else, if you're focused on hearing me speak, the breathing usually takes care of itself. And so there's a way in which we don't have to be involved in the breathing. And so the attention is similar. We can choose what to pay attention to, or we can settle back and receive what is already happening in the present moment. What is attention already aware of? This can take some time to get used to. For me, it was it was an exploration over the course of several years to really begin to learn what it means. And so it is a little unfamiliar at times. And yet even a little bit of exploration can begin to open you to this capacity of receptive awareness. In the guided meditation, we spent quite a bit of time with hearing, the hearing practice. And this can be a doorway for us. For me, this was an early doorway into receptive awareness. So right now, just turn to the experience of hearing. We'll do it again here in this moment. Turn to the experience of hearing and know that hearing is happening. There's, you know, kind of the hum. We hear the hum of the recorder or the amplifier. There's the sound of my voice. Maybe inner sounds in your body. Distant sounds outside. And we don't know what the next sound will be. And so we kind of have to settle back and receive. And we can just kind of hang out at the ear and take what comes. And so exploring the hearing can be an interesting way to begin to play with receptive awareness. So receptive awareness can be the entire way that we explore mindfulness. You know, settle back and just receive what's here. Receive, receive, receive. Never actually choosing what to direct the attention to. This really points to the fact that our practice is about cultivating mindfulness itself. We're just exploring what does it mean to be here for what's already here. So this can be a way to cultivate mindfulness. The stability of the mind results from the mind actually being here for what's happening in the present moment. It doesn't go out into thoughts of past or future because it's knowing moment after moment, oh, this is what's happening. Oh, this is what's obvious. Oh, this. Oh, this. And yet, in my own experience, that was it can be a little challenging to just sit with that. And so it can be useful to direct the attention at times. And so what I'd like to offer at this moment, at this point for a tool, is how we might explore receptive awareness with a directed attention. We just did it with hearing. We kind of narrowed our focus a little bit to hearing, but then played with settling back and just receiving the sound. That's kind of like the way a radio works. A radio receiver. It's even called a receiver. That's what it does. It receives the sound waves. And, if you have a receiver that is not tuned to something, it receives kind of static, you know. It's nothing specific that you're noticing. It's just kind of general static. And yet we can tune that radio receiver to a particular station. And then we tune it to a frequency, and then that receiver receives the waves at that frequency. It's not going out and searching for things at that frequency. It's not looking for things. It's receiving. And very similarly, we can do that with our meditation. We can tune, like a little bit of tuning to the ear, to the ear door, and then receive the experience of hearing. We can tune to the breath and then receive the experience of breathing. Why do receptive awareness as opposed to directed awareness? Couple of reasons. One, it takes less energy. When we're looking for something, the very looking takes quite a bit of energy. So we can tune to an area. We can tune to hearing. But then we don't have to look or listen for sounds. We can settle back and receive. We can tune to the breath. But then we don't have to look for what are the sensations? Oh, there's that sensation and that sensation and that sensation. Instead, we tune to the breath and receive what's available to be known with the breath. And so the receptive awareness actually allows more of our bandwidth for what knowing what's happening to be available for what's going on in the present moment. If we're looking for something, we're likely to miss what's actually here. This happens all the time in our everyday lives. If we're looking for something, you know, it's called selective attention. We're looking for something, our minds screen for that thing and miss other things happening in the present moment. And so if we tune to the breath and are looking for particular sensations, we may miss the sensations that are actually here. And this exploration of receptivity I found to be something that begins to open me to experiences that I had no idea were out there. Experiences that I had no idea were possible. Sensations I didn't know that were there. If we're looking for something, we'll only find what we look for. When we're receptive, we may recognize things that we are unfamiliar with. And this is a huge part of our mindfulness practice, is to begin to open to things that we didn't know were there. And the only way to do that is to be receptive. If we're looking for something we already know, we may miss what we don't know. So this receptive practice has that benefit. So with the breath, what does it mean to tune and receive the breath? And you know, how might that work? Again, a couple tools in that terrain for myself that you know, I found when I was first starting to pay attention to the breath, I was told to tune my experience to a small area of the abdomen. So it's like I tried to narrow my focus down to that very little area. Okay, what's happening there? And began to feel some things, and then I started looking for those sensations, little pops or little you know, pressures and relaxes of pressure. So just, you know, noticing that. But it felt to me like the mind got very small. At some point, I began to recognize, okay, I can attend to a small area like that. But rather than thinking of making the mind compressed to look at that area, that's just a perceptual thing anyway. It's just the mind thinking it's being compressed. See if instead you might, again, have a receptive approach. It's like, okay, settle back, let the experience in that area kind of get as big as awareness. Like, let that experience come into awareness. Sometimes we can even think about, okay, I'm just going to settle here and just think about awareness as being as big, at least as big as my whole body, if not as big as the room or bigger. So that we just have this sense of awareness, you know, settle back, relax, awareness is big, and then let that experience of that small area fill, like get as big as the awareness. Settling back, letting that, it's like, you know, zooming in on an iPad, you know, you've got this area and, you know, you open it up, let the small piece you want to look at fill the screen. Kind of similar. Let this experience of breath fill the screen of awareness. That's one way to have it be receptive. Again, we have to kind of settle back, not be looking, not directing. Another way I found helpful for receptivity around the breath is having a sense of not looking directly at the breath, but instead kind of having a sense of looking just at the edges. So again, if you're paying attention to a particular area, like, you know, this area in the abdomen or an area around the nostrils, rather than focusing in like that, it's like, you know, think about the attention as being a little bit bigger than that area, or like you're not really looking right at it, but looking at the edges of it, like using your peripheral vision to be with that experience. To me, this kind of feels like I step back. And again, it's a receptive experience. The breath can be very delicate. Again, if you look right at it, you may obscure what's actually there. So, you know, it's kind of like looking at wildlife. You know, you don't really want it to know you're there. Looking at, you know, some rare animal. You know, you don't really want it to know you're there because it may flee. And kind of similarly with the breath. If you look right at it, sometimes it obliterates it. So a sense of being very quiet, looking at it from the side almost. So it's really helpful to begin to recognize that we do not have to direct the attention in order to be mindful. If we have this idea that directing the attention equals mindfulness, we will actually lose whole areas of our experience where we can be mindful. And one of the ways in which this happens, or one of the key experiences in meditation, is that of the wandering mind. You know, we choose to pay attention to something and then our mind wanders. And, you know, we might think, oh, come back to the breath. But what has happened there? You know, what's happened when the mind has wandered? What's happened is that we've had some idea, perhaps, of paying attention to something. In this case, you know, paying attention to the breath. And the attention has picked up on something without our realizing it. So We're kind of consciously have an agenda to pay attention to something, and the attention has moved to something else, say a sound, paying attention to the breath. The attention has shifted. We didn't notice it. What happens? Often, when we're not aware that attention is paying attention to something, the mind goes into its habits. It starts thinking about it. Oh, there's a sound. Oh, there's a motorcycle. Oh, wonder where that motorcycle is going. Oh, maybe it's going to San Francisco. I wonder what... And we're gone. Because we didn't notice that attention had shifted. And as we begin to get familiar with what it means to receive experience, we may start to recognize, you know, it's like, oh, I'm paying attention to the breath. Oh, the attention took in sound. We can begin to follow the attention rather than feeling like we have to direct the attention. This is, I would say the key cause of the mind wandering is that the attention has shifted to something and we've not been aware of it. Often that happens because we're a little more focused on something, and we're not broadening our attention to realize. And so we can begin to get familiar with what it feels like for the attention to shift to a new experience. So again, this very supportive, this receptive attention. Then a kind of a joining of relaxation and attention. So these two tools, relax and receive. I like to shorten it, you know, so we can actually start our meditation. Okay, relax. Relax and receive experience. Relax and receive. So these two come together in a kind of a relaxed attention. Relaxed attention. Right now, I'm going to direct your attention again. Notice the experience of your hands, the sensations of your hands. Notice the sensations of your hips against the chair or cushion or bench. Notice the contact points of your feet. How hard is it in a moment? How hard was that to know that experience in a moment? It's usually not too hard when I say an area, often the attention is right there. And so it's not terribly hard in a moment to have that relaxed attention in a moment. What is harder is to sustain it. And this is where the power of mindfulness arises, is with a sustained attention. As we begin to be able to stay present moment after moment after moment, this is when we can begin to recognize that, oh, this reactivity is happening in this moment, and be aware of it more continuously so that it can release. So it is harder to sustain it over time, and yet we carry ideas and agendas about what it means to sustain anything. From our lives, we carry that into our meditation, what it means to sustain something or what it means to strengthen something. We think often it means, okay, you know, kind of gathering up energy and holding on to that energy. And we often do that at the beginning of a period of meditation. Okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to be aware for this period, this half hour, or this 45 minutes. I'm going to be, and it's kind of like we pick up the whole 45 minutes in that first second and try to gather the energy in that first moment. All that we can do is to be aware for a moment. Any extra energy added to that is just exhausting us. It's just draining the energy. And so an exploration around energy and relaxed attention is to really keep the effort light. A moment, just enough effort to be present for a half a breath, just enough effort to be present for an in-breath. Can you do that right now? And then just enough effort to be present for an out-breath. You know, how hard is it to be present for half a breath? Usually we can do that. Then it takes a little bit of recommitment. So a little bit. I have to stay. Just enough for another half a breath. Just moment after moment. There's an analogy I use. Many of you have heard me use this analogy around the way it works to ride a scooter, a little kick scooter, not one of the motorized ones, but like one of the little razor scooters that kids ride. And so you balance on the scooter, and you have to have your foot down at first to balance, but then you start tapping. You tap. And at first you tap a lot to get the momentum going. You might put your foot down and push really hard, but that tends to send you off balance. Kick, 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 little taps, tiny taps, tiny taps. And that gets momentum going so that you can ride for a little while. And then the scooter starts getting wobbly, and you put your foot down and tap a little bit more. So you get familiar with both the kind of way you tap, the light taps, and what it means for the scooter to get wobbly so that you know when to tap again. You learn what it feels like to ride that scooter, knowing when you don't need to tap. Very similar experience in the meditation. We learn what does it mean to just enough energy, just enough mindfulness to be present for this in-breath or this moment, this sound, this body sensation. Just enough energy to be present for this moment. As we do that over and over again, we notice that half a breath, half a breath, half a breath, a momentum begins to build. And then we begin to get familiar with what it means to be present for longer stretches of time. We can make enough energy to be present for half a breath, and lo and behold, we're present for two. And so we don't need to keep reminding ourselves as much. So we get familiar with that kind of riding the wave of mindfulness that comes as we, oh, can I be with this in-breath? We begin to get familiar with what it means for that mindfulness to get a little wobbly and reconnect. Oh, a little energy to connect again. So that little bit of effort begins to bear the fruit of momentum. So that's relax and receive. Relax and receive. Cultivating a very relaxed attention, very gentle approach to moment after moment. The third tool is allowing. This is really where the mindfulness starts to become wise mindfulness. We cultivate an allowing attitude towards whatever is happening in the present moment. A sound. Allowing the sound. Allowing brings in this perspective of kindness, of love, to our mindfulness. We cultivate a kind attention, a loving attention, non-rejecting attention. When we're rejecting what's happening, that shouldn't be here, that shouldn't be here, we are bringing in those reactivities, even at very subtle ways. Beliefs of, you know, that's not good, or that's not supposed to be here. And so our practice is this allowing. You know, can I be with what's here without rejecting it, without wanting it to stay, without trying to either hold on to it or push it away? This allowing exploration is what really begins to help us be honest and full about what our experience of being human is. We have so many ideas about what we should or shouldn't feel or believe or do or have happening in our experience. And as we cultivate this allowing attitude, we begin to really cultivate a fully unconditional relationship and love for ourselves. We all, I think, want to have somebody love us unconditionally, to know us, even with all of our difficulties and our reactivities. It's like we want somebody to love us in that way, to completely be seen, to completely belong in some way. I feel like I don't have to put any of myself outside in order to belong. This allowing attitude begins to move us in the direction of being able to belong to ourselves of being able to be so honest with ourselves about what our human experience is. No part left out. No part excluded. No part somehow having to be excised. And yet, there are parts of us that we feel are, now it's humbling. It's really humbling to see what's in there. It's so humbling to see our prejudice, our judgment, our frustration, our self-hatred. It's humbling to see what's in there. And so it's usually not possible to simply say, oh, well, the teacher said I should allow everything, so let me do that. Self-hatred, okay, I'll allow that. Our minds have a very strong habit of not allowing. And so the way towards this allowing attitude isn't to try to force yourself to allow something that your mind resists or reacts to. Isn't try to force yourself to allow something the mind doesn't want to allow. But rather, and it sounds paradoxical, but it works. Okay, there's that thing happening, and boy, I sure don't like it. Can you allow that? Allow the not liking to be there. To not feel like you have to get rid of the not liking. In that turning towards, opening to what's here in this moment. It may be reactivity. It may be frustration or anger or confusion. And there may be reactions to that. You know, there's anger and there's fear of being angry. Can you allow the fear? Can I allow the not allowing to be there? This begins, it's kind of like our minds are this really, you know, it's like a big ship. Lots of momentum heading in the direction of how we've lived our lives in the past. It's like this big battleship. It's heading in a direction. It's huge. It's got a lot of energy, a lot of momentum behind it. You're not going to be able to turn that mind quickly. And so we see, essentially what we start by seeing is, oh, this is the direction the battleship is going. Okay, can I allow that without continuing to aim the ship in that direction? That, and paradoxically, the opening to, the allowing, oh, anger is what's happening right now. Frustration is what's happening right now. Reactivity is what's happening right now. Stops aiming the mind in that direction and begins to allow it to turn in a new direction. So allowing the not allowing. It's kind of like we create a bigger container. Like it's stepping back. So it's like our minds are aware of this much. Oh, there's that thing happening, and I don't like it. But we're not so aware of the not liking it. So step back. Oh, that thing's happening, and I don't like it. That's what's happening. There's some language that I found really helpful in this regard around this allowing attention for myself. I like the language, can I be with my experience? There's a vast difference between being with reactivity and being reactive. And we know that difference, actually. There's a little bit of space. It's that stepping back. There's a little space that's created in the being with. And that being with creates the conditions for the allowing to happen. Allowing doesn't mean that we have to like what's happening. It has nothing to do with agreeing or disagreeing with what's happening. It is simply recognizing in a very fundamental way that what is happening is already happening. It's already here. It's not about agreeing or disagreeing with it. It's about recognizing, this is what's happening right now. And that creates the conditions for a shift to happen. It's not about believing that it's right or wrong that this thing should be happening. It's about acknowledging this is what's actually happening. And as we acknowledge this is what's actually happening, honestly, fully, we have a much better ground out of which to respond to what's happening rather than to react. As I mentioned earlier, we have a much better capacity to respond from love, from compassion, from kindness, from generosity, rather than reacting out of greed, aversion, delusion. So it's not about passivity. Allowing is not about passivity either. And so, relax, receive, allow. These three tools can be used in any kind of practice that you explore. And it's time to stop. Thank you.